So welcome to Barnstorming PA. We are interviewing here Bob Solomon. He's running for U.S. Congress in the 18th District. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. So we wanted to start off talking a little bit. We have a little intro for the show. So Barnstorming PA is a podcast about national, regional, and local politics. We combine thoughts on the issues with the perspectives of people who are on the ground in the grassroots, fighting for the people, fighting for progressive and liberal change. My name's Jordy Comas, and I try and be the person who brings ideas, and I have a background in research to the podcast.
Yeah, and I'm Taylor. I have been a political operative on some campaigns, and I'm sort of the young buck of the crowd, so to speak.
we're missing the third of our trio, Chip Faika, who I think is on his way back from Alabama.
He was in Alabama over the weekend at a NASCAR event doing a direct action there. So
we're gonna leave it at that.
We'll just leave it at that.
Tantalize the audience. Okay.
Yeah. Check into one of our earlier episodes, our first episode, if you want to hear what he's up to. So, Bob, welcome to the show. Could you start off by telling us about yourself and your family?
Sure. I'm an emergency physician. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, and then when it was time to apply to medical school, discovered something that most Philadelphians take a long time to discover, which is that there's more to Pennsylvania than Philadelphia. And so I realized that there were medical schools in other parts of the state that I should apply to, and one of them was the University of Pittsburgh. Came out for a visit, fell in love with the city and the school, was accepted, moved to Pittsburgh nearly four decades ago, and have never left, nor have I ever wanted to leave. So I've been living in the Pittsburgh area since the late 70s, and went to medical school at Pitt, did my postgraduate residency training in Pittsburgh, and have practiced at emergency medicine at hospitals in the region for 32 years since finishing my training. I am married to a woman who is from the Pittsburgh area. My wife, Donna, is an electrical engineer and grew up in Forest Hills, which is on the east side of the city. And we have two children, grown children. My older daughter is a high school mathematics teacher, married to a high school history teacher. They live in Southern California and have one child. So I have a grandchild now, about a year and a half old. My younger daughter is in medical school in at Temple University in Philadelphia, although she's doing her clinical training now in the third year at Geisinger Medical Center in Danville, Pennsylvania.
Excellent. Yeah, that's not too far from where we are.
We know it well.
Yeah. So what made you, what prompted you to run for Congress?
Well, I could back up just a little bit and say that back in the early 90s, I went for the first time to a meeting that my professional organization, the American College of Emergency Physicians, holds every year in Washington, D.C., the focus of which is legislative advocacy. And in the course of that meeting, I spent most of a day visiting representatives and senators on Capitol Hill. The very first time I did that, I really felt very uncomfortable, very much out of my element. Sorry. And it was a rather odd experience, but at the same time, it was interesting and intriguing. And over the years since then, I've paid many, many visits to Capitol Hill to talk to representatives and senators, not only my own, but others from around the country about various issues in health policy, legislation, and regulations affecting the healthcare system. Never really had any thoughts of wanting to go inside the Beltway as an elected representative myself, largely because I thought that there was absolutely no way to win election to federal office, House or Senate, without taking a lot of money from people I wouldn't want to take money from because of a certain set of ethical values. And then last year, there was this fellow generally depicted by the news media as that crazy socialist from Vermont.
Yeah.
Who ran for president and didn't take money from corporations and didn't take money from super PACs and delighted in having his crowds at rallies shout in unison $27 when he asked them how much money the average contribution to his campaign was. And that made me think, well, you know, maybe all these years I was wrong and it actually is possible. That didn't make me decide that I wanted to run for public office, but it at least moved my thinking away from the notion that it was just entirely out of the question. Then in November, we elected a fellow who is far and away the least qualified candidate ever nominated by a major party for the office of the president in our nation's history. And then when he was inaugurated in January, he started appointing people to the cabinet. And each of those appointments was more horrible than the last. Secretary of Health and Human Services, who doesn't believe in covering all Americans for health care. Somebody to head the EPA, rather, who doesn't believe in protecting the environment. Secretary of Education, who doesn't believe in public education. Secretary of Energy, who wants to abolish that department. And it just went on, and each one was more horrifying than the last. And then the Republicans in Congress decided to get to work on the effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And when a bill was going to come to the floor in the House, I wrote to my member of the House of Representatives, who was someone I had gotten to know, meeting with him many times over the years, both on Capitol Hill and in the home district, and even a couple of times in Reagan National Airport when we happened to run into each other. And I thought he was someone who understood the issues and that I could connect with. And so I wrote him a letter telling him how important it was for him to be one of the small minority of Republicans in the House who would vote no. Pennsylvania has 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats, even though it's a purple state, and that's because of the evil genius of Karl Rove and gerrymandering. In the House of Representatives, 20 members, Republicans, voted no on this horrible thing called the American Health Care Act, the repeal and replace measure, and 4 of those 20 were from Pennsylvania, but my congressman was not one of them. He ignored my letter, didn't even bother to reply to it, and voted yes for this god-awful piece of legislation. And when he did that, I thought this fellow was unopposed in 2014 in the general election, and again in 2016. That cannot happen in 2018.
Why do you think he runs unopposed in the 18th?
Well, he ran unopposed in 2016 and 2014 just because I think the Democratic Party on the state and local level had just given up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the political pundits, the analysts, the smart fellows like Charlie Cook and Larry Sabato,
right,
said that this was a safe Republican district, R plus 10, R plus 11. And so even though there are actually more registered Democrats than Republicans in the district, it was just considered a hopeless district because there are too many Democrats who were willing to vote Republican for someone they thought was a moderate Republican, although a look at his voting record makes it clear that that is anything but the case. And inevitably, you know, not only were there some Democrats who thought he was a moderate Republican and that therefore he was okay, but there are some Democrats who, you know, who are what in the 80s and 90s were called Reagan Democrats, and some members of the Democratic Party who inexplicably voted for Donald Trump last November. And so when you have a Democratic electorate like that in the district, the fact that there are more registered Democrats than Republicans doesn't really tell you, oh, we really can win this district, unless you figure out a way to connect with all the Democrats who have misguidedly voted Republican year after year, and the Republicans who really are moderates and who are rational, and all of the independents. I think if you can do those three things, if you can appeal to Reagan Democrats and to moderate Republicans and to independents who think independently, it is possible to win this district, but the Democratic Party has not been looking at it that way for the last two election cycles.
Yeah, wow. That's a great answer. And I think this actually really dovetails nicely into our next question. Like, the area is very Republican, and if you look at Larry Cook's scores, or Charlie Cook's,
Charlie Cook's, Larry, yeah. Larry Sabato.
Yeah, if you look at their scores, it is R plus 10 or 11. But, you know, you have districts like Colin Peterson's in Minnesota where it's an R plus 17, but he wins time after time. So it's if you run the same election every year, you're going to lose. But that doesn't mean you can't win. You just need to change the conversation. What is your plan to, like, the task at hand is to reach out to these folks that, you know, have been checking the R box, you know, to reach out to them. What is your plan to win? Like, how do you plan on changing the conversation?
Well, this year, of course, the issue of reforming the way we finance healthcare in the United States is something that is really in the foreground of the landscape of the coming election, and very much on people's minds, partly because people realize that the Affordable Care Act isn't perfect, but that what the Republicans are offering to do to change it is frightening, if not horrifying. The House passed a measure. The Senate had no clue what to do with it and managed to do nothing, which was probably best. But now we know that President Trump is determined to take action on his own, and just a few days ago issued an executive order indicating just what his plans are for basically taking a hatchet to the Affordable Care Act. And so people are really paying attention to this, and they're really focused on how many Americans will lose health care coverage and for how many of them it will become much more expensive and for many of them unaffordable. And they're really very concerned. And so I enter this picture as someone who has been practicing medicine on the front lines for more than three decades. I'm in a specialty in which we take care of folks who have no health insurance or who have inadequate coverage. We take care of everybody without regard for ability to pay. And because we do that, we get to see an emergency medicine in a very real and immediate way every single day. The consequences of people lacking healthcare coverage, all the terrible things that happen to them. Yeah. And so I have the frontline experience to have a deep understanding of that. And I've also been studying health policy for more than a quarter century. So I have expertise, which is essentially, it's rare, bordering on non-existent on Capitol Hill. There are 17. Sorry?
Yeah, Bob Corker is a physician, isn't he?
Let me tell you, there are 17 physicians on Capitol Hill, yeah. 17 between the House and the Senate. 15 of them are Republicans and two Democrats. Maybe. And only one of the 17 is someone with some expertise in health policy. That is Raul Ruiz, who actually has a degree in public health from Harvard. But even Dr. Ruiz lacks something that I have. He has nowhere near the experience in clinical practice that I have. So I have expertise in health policy coupled with more than three decades of direct clinical experience. There are basically two ways to influence people in Congress when you're among them. One is to give them hard data, and the other is anecdotes. And many of them are swayed by anecdotes because they don't really understand hard data, they don't really understand statistics, they don't understand epidemiology, but they are swayed by anecdotes. My years of clinical experience mean that I have enough anecdotes to fill a month of airtime on C-SPAN.
Yeah. Well, so, let's just, I'm curious, you know, can you give us a picture of what a lack of health of health insurance looks like in Western Pennsylvania for you?
Well, let me just offer you two quick examples. Young man, early 20s, comes to the emergency department feeling sick. And I walk into the room, and because of my experience and powers of observation, it's apparent to me in the first 10 seconds in the room that this poor fellow has diabetes, which is critically out of control. And I talk to the nurse in the room and tell her what I want her to do, and we immediately begin implementing all the measures it's going to take to snatch this very seriously ill young man from the jaws of death. And then once things are going, I start looking at his medical records, and I see that in the previous 24 months, he has been hospitalized in the intensive care unit seven times in 24 months. And I do a little more investigating, and I realize there's a very simple reason for this. In spite of the fact that he works full-time at a minimum wage job, he has no health care coverage, therefore he can't find a primary care doctor and can't pay for his insulin and his supplies with any consistency, and here we are, admitting him for the eighth time to the intensive care unit. And this was before Medicaid was expanded in Pennsylvania, and I went back to see him after he was after his treatment was well underway, and he looked at me with sadness and an obvious guilt in his eyes, and apologized for the fact that he wasn't taking care of himself and had to be admitted to the intensive care unit yet again. And I said to him, son, I'm old enough, he's young enough that I could do that. I said, son, it's not your fault. There are people in Harrisburg who simply don't care about people like you, and it's their fault. It's not your fault that you don't have health care coverage. The other day, I took care of a patient in the emergency department in the wee hours of the morning who needed a specialist that we didn't have at my hospital, and I told her we were going to have to transfer her to one of the big tertiary care hospitals. And when I told her that, she got a look of horror on her face. Now, this is a woman who has health insurance. Why was she horrified? Because at my hospital, her responsibility for the bill would have been 10%. At the hospital I needed to send her to get the right specialist, 30%. She had some idea of how big the bill was going to be. And that 20% difference, she did the quick mental arithmetic and realized that would place a crushing burden of debt on her that would take her 5 years to get out from under that 20% difference. This absurdly fragmented non-system for financing healthcare that we have is terrible even for people who have coverage. There are just so many things wrong with it. And it simply has to change. And the Republicans are clueless. And all the Democrats know at this point, most of them, is that what the Republicans want to do is unacceptable. We need more people on Capitol Hill who really understand how the system works, and more important, understand how and why it doesn't work and what to do to fix it.
So we want to change topic for a moment and maybe do something a little more lighthearted. What's something for you that's been fun or exciting about campaigning?
Well, this past summer I started going to gatherings of people who are active in the Democratic Party and talking to groups and telling them about myself and my positions on issues and the things that I think are important. And, for most of my adult life, I've been, a political junkie and love reading about current events and politics and what is going on in society, socioculturally and politically, and the workings of government. I've found these things fascinating, love to talk about them, and most of the people around me have a very limited tolerance for that. And then, so all of a sudden, over the last several months, I have found myself among people who are just as hooked on this stuff as I am. Mm-hmm. And when I want to talk about the issues that I think are important, where we should be going, what we should be doing, they're actually listening, and they actually have ideas that they want to share too. It's been great fun.
Great.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's great to be part of a community like that.
Do you want to do?
I guess our final question is, you know, for people listening to this, how can people plug into your campaign? How can they get involved?
Well, there are basically two ways to connect with the campaign. One is through the campaign Facebook page, which is actually where we got started with our web presence. And you know, just go to Facebook and put in Solomon for Congress in the search field, and you'll find me. And then we have a campaign website, which has come online more recently. And the web address is Solomon4, that's the numeral 4, so S-O-L-O-M-O-N, numeral 4, PA18, PA for Pennsylvania, 18, again, numerals.com. So Solomon4PA18.com. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll see all the usual kinds of fun stuff that go on Facebook. If you go to the campaign website, there's much more information about positions on issues. Facebook doesn't really lend itself to that, but on a website, you can write issue papers that that enable people to get into more detail. Probably not quite as much down in the weeds stuff as the serious policy wonks would like, because those are people who like to get not only down into the weeds, but they want to explore what species each weed actually is, and maybe look at the weeds on the cellular level. So maybe not quite the level of detail they would like, but the issue papers are fairly detailed. I tried to keep them from being so long and so deep that the ADH crowd would back away. No, I can't read that much.
Right.
Both of those places have ways of connecting with the campaign, and you know, sending us emails and messages. And so people who want to get involved in any way at all can connect with me that way, and I would love to hear from them.
I doubt that very many people win based, especially, you know, insurgent outsider candidates like you, win based on the footnotes in their policy papers. I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over that.
Yeah. I'm sure you're right.
Well, thanks for talking, Bob, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, Barnstorming PA, we're back. We wanted to just do three takeaways from our interview with Bob Solomon.
Candidate for Congress
in Pennsylvania, 18th. Fighting 18th! Colbert used to always do that.
He, really?
Yeah, for a while he had this series of, he was always be like, the, you know, the fighting 42nd or whatever, like every single one. Fighting 18th.
Oh, all right.
So the first one was, so we'll list these three takeaways, and we both have
explain it a little bit.
Yeah, right. So the first one is sort of observations on Dr. Solomon as a first-time candidate for Congress, which he is.
The second is sort of what was the second?
His presentation.
Oh, yeah.
Which we're calling authoritative, calming yet authoritative.
Yes. And not timid.
Yeah, right.
And then the third is just reflection on the quality of candidate, which we think he is a quality candidate for a race that Democrats haven't fielded a candidate, sounds like, for 2 years.
Two cycles. 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years.
All right, so first-time candidate, this, of course, is all given in the spirit of constructive feedback.
Yes.
I think you want to strike a conversational tone in interviews, and he's clearly a very intelligent, cerebral person. But you know, some of the answers were
physician answers, not politician answers, which is, you know,
understandable.
It's understandable. Yeah, totally.
But a little long.
Yeah.
There was clearly sort of 5 points in his head that he was going to get to.
Yeah, and he got to all of them, but. It's important for politicians. People might give you 30 seconds, and it's important to have an elevator pitch. I'm running.
Right.
Here's maybe even 15 seconds.
Right.
Boom. There we go.
We didn't get a chance to get into, and I'd be curious if we ever get a follow-up. I mean, he puts himself out as a progressive Democrat. What does that mean to him? Yeah, what does that mean to him?
We might have been able to cover more, you know, a broader range of topics if he'd given shorter answers. But I did appreciate the depth of his answers. So
right.
You got to strike a balance, and I think he might have been
Right. I mean, when he
hit
got
it
into,
on, hit it on the on
right.
The, yeah.
When he got into the anecdotes, that you know, that was better, and he clearly understood that anecdotes are important. But I think every time he's thinking about these factual analytical answers, he needs to wrap each one up in a nice, pretty anecdote and put a bow on it.
Yeah. Some one of the, you know, I'll call it a. And this isn't a specifically Barack Obama thing, but I'll call it a Barack Obama political genius thing that he always did in all of his speeches. Was, I think of so-and-so over in, you know, over in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania.
Right.
You know, they did this, and, you know, it's and then it goes into anecdote. And every statement he makes is backed up with a personal anecdote that he's, you know, so.
Right.
I think Bob Solomon could benefit from using that technique because he has so many anecdotes, it sounds like, about healthcare.
So the second one is his demeanor. Of course, this was all auditory for us. But you know, I was thinking he's an emergency room physician, and wow, if you had broken your leg or there was a car accident, this is someone who you
would, feel very comfortable with.
Very comfortable with, very calming, and at the same time authoritative. And I think that that could be an asset. You know, that could sound like, oh,
he's a leader.
He's a leader. And at the same time, even though it was not, you know, there weren't sort of wild swings in volume like I might have or outbursts of passionate disgust like I might have. There was this, especially I think it was clear in his answer about the other physicians in Congress that, he, you know, he's not going to back down. I mean, there was no professional deference about them being physicians. He was like, they don't know what they're talking about. They're making terrible votes. They're hurting people with these votes. And I'll just say, as a shout out, if you look at his website, he's not a one-issue candidate. He's got about 8-issue positions outlined on his webpage, taxes, gun laws, racial justice.
But I do think that there is ground to be gained in Western Pennsylvania by a candidate that's talking about affordable health care. You know, I think that's a winning issue for Democrats in general.
And I can remember, I think, back when the Affordable Care Act was being talked about, and probably all the way back to the Clinton efforts to do health care, you know, Republican pundits and commentators would say, in moments of occasional forthrightness, that, you know, they were terrified of this issue because they know once better access to health care becomes something people experience and have an expectation of, it it's hard to claw that back. And so, you know, they're terrified of anything that seems like I hate that word entitlement because it just always sounds like...
I hate it too. It's terrible framing.
It's awful and we shouldn't say it, but, you know, a right to a quality of life issue. And the third one is caliber candidate. I mean, you know, I don't know the full backstory. I'm assuming since no one's run for two cycles, you know, he's doing this on his own. Sounds like things we see in our area where institutionally the Democratic Party has issues. People have made decisions that seem rational in the moment, don't invest resources in heavily Republican districts, but that's not a long-term winning strategy.
No.
And so, you know, I mean, the guy is a healthcare policy wonk and a physician with, you know, a lovely family. Like, that's awesome.
It's fantastic. I was looking up on my phone, Jordy's...
No one can see you.
Nobody. I was just looking up on my phone to make sure that race had actually been
uncontested
for the last two cycles, which it has been. You know, if we are fielding candidates of that caliber in places we haven't even played in two cycles, we're doing pretty well.
All right. I think that's it.
All right.
Okay. We'll see y'all.
Bye.